Well, you may have noticed that it's Father's Day. And to commemorate that, I'm wearing cufflinks that came from my father. My father was born in Harlem to a very poor family, and I'm not sure whether these are gold or brass, but they were given to him for his bar mitzvah. And so they are of a certain age, and I realize that so am I. So I wear this on Father's Day. This tie was given to me by my kids for Father's Day. So like it or not, and I happen to, this is being recorded, I do wonder why it was that they thought to give me a Jerry Garcia tie, but that's one of those things that's probably better left unexplored, I suspect. The other thing is that if you see me limping a little bit today, the other thing that I got from my father was the gout. And all of those years and the precious legacy and inheritance of the ages on both my father's side and my mother's side is uric acid. And at the moment, I am having a gout attack. So if I kick my shoes off, you will understand it's just because... Thanks, Dad. And... where I planned on beginning this sermon, it's kind of an interesting confluence of events. My father died at the age of 56 from a coronary on April 15th, 1965, the day of death and taxes, a day that I certainly remember every year. You can't kind of miss that anniversary. And 13 years later, on April 15th, I found myself in the hospital, in the intensive care unit, not knowing if I was going to live or die. I was pretty much out of it, as an adult will be when the fever gets above 104. I was trached, so I couldn't talk. I had a lot of stuff going wrong at that time. And I was in San Francisco. I had been taken off a train coming back from a UU conference up in Puget Sound. And I was out of it and delirious, and I felt somebody take my hand and hold it as I was in the ICU. And I didn't know who it was for a while, but that hand just stayed in mine for a while, and when I kind of woke up, I looked over, and it was my friend and colleague, the Reverend Mark Bellatini, who is the editor of our hymnal. He succeeded me at Star King Unitarian Universalist Church in Hayward, and he was the first out-of-the-closet gay minister settled in the UUA. And there he was holding my hand, not saying anything, not solving anything, not giving me any great words of comfort except the touch of flesh to flesh, except presence, except being there. And all of those exceptions are, in fact, everything. That's what we have to give as fathers, as mothers, as brothers, as children, as grandparents. Presence and time. One of the things that's so difficult, and it was such a learning experience for me, because at that point I had been a minister probably for 10 years and had called on the sick and the well in two congregations, and it wasn't really clear to me why. It was just part of the job. That's what you did. They told you to go. And I didn't know until that moment that I didn't need, you don't need, we don't need smart words and solutions. We need to be there. Woody Allen said 80% of success in life is showing up. And by success, I do not mean fame. I do not mean fortune. I mean showing up and being a successful human being, father, daughter, mother, sister, uncle, friend to each other. It's powerful how little we have to know, how inarticulate it is okay to be, but what is critical is showing up to and for each other. One of the questions that gets thrown out in the Bible, and by thrown I don't mean thrown away, but thrown out and posed in the Bible, from of all of the biblical characters, the most interesting one who poses the question is God, who keeps asking the biblical figures, "Where are you?" And the biblical figures, with one exception, all say in Hebrew, because that's what they spoke, "Hineni," I'm here. Here I am. The one exception is Adam and Eve. I guess that's two exceptions in the Garden of Eden, when God calls out after they've transgressed, "Where are you?" And they're trying to hide in the bushes. And not very successfully, and even the ancient sages understood that that question was not coming because God didn't have the information. Two naked people in the bushes can't be that hard for God to find, but they were very hard for Adam and Eve to find, because they were hiding not from God but from themselves. And that question of where are you is an important one. Where are we in our lives, in our journeys? When we look at the biblical text and the answer, God calls out to Abraham and Abraham says, "Here I am," and then God gives him an order to go take and sacrifice his son. Maybe Abraham would have been better off hiding in the bushes, and the Middle East might have unfolded completely differently had it not been for that post-traumatic stress disorder in Jewish history. But the point of the passage is that the response is, "Here I am." The question is posed again and again in Genesis. It's posed again and again in Isaiah. "Where are you?" And Isaiah says, "Here I am, send me, use me, use my life well." And so the "where are you" and the "here I am" is a self-finding question. Where are we in our lives, on our paths, with our values, with who we are as human beings? Are we leading our own lives or the lives that were expected of us by parents, or the lives that are expected of us by our children? There was a wonderful line shared on NPR this morning as I was driving here, where the person being interviewed talked about how, watching his son grow up, his son was like a pitcher that was shaking off signs to the catcher, and the father was the catcher, and the son had to declare his freedom by shaking off signs. That's what we have to do. We have to question everything. One of the things that came up in all of the Russert material was his Jesuit background and how he was taught to question even his own faith by the Jesuit brothers, to ask, "What is it that I believe? Where is it that my values are? Where are my priorities in this world? Are they about success? Are they about fame? Or are they about family and values that are truly mine?" These are hard questions that most of us, I won't say many of us, when they show up at 3 o'clock in the morning, would just assume that they would go away. Because it's easier to live life one automatic step at a time, fulfilling expectations, instead of walking back and standing back and asking, "Okay, what is it that is important to me? Not what do I think should be important to me, but what is important to me?" And as the Gospels say, "By their fruits ye shall know them." We find out our priorities by looking at ourselves, by looking in our mirror, by looking in our checkbooks, by looking at how we actually spend our time. Do we do what we can to comfort the bereaved, to hold and help and heal each other? Do we put our bodies, our full bodies, where we believe our values are? There's a social science tool that deals with, and you even checked the phone before we started. I saw you set it down. It's not your fault. I actually saw him take it out and turn the sound off. It's self-activated. It's magic. And you've seen the thing with the four cell phones popping the popcorn? Gives me pause. It doesn't. You tried. Okay. Where was I?
Here I am.
Here I. Is that you? Okay. Good. The social service tools. The social science tools of content analysis. Look at how many column inches are devoted to a subject, and you'll find out how important the subject is. Look at the amount of time that we devote to showing up in the lives of our parents, of our children, of our friends, of the members of our community. Don't talk about what we value, but look to see what it is we value, and if we are out of sync. And I can tell you personally, whenever I have the courage to do a frank inventory, I find myself out of sync with my values. So this is not a guilt rap that I'm throwing at you. It's important to look and see how congruent our lives as we live them and spend them are to our values. One of the things that I hear all of the time is the, I can't wait till school's out. Then I'm going to have fun. I can't wait till I get my driver's license. Then it's going to be great. I can't wait till I get my new car. I can't wait till I get married. Then it's really going to be terrific. And I'm going to start doing these things that I really want to do after I have children. Well, after the children are in school. Well, after the children are out of the house. I'm going to really do all the things I planned on doing with my life after I retire. We spend our lives doing all those things. If your life is not in the moment when you are young, when you are driving, when you are dating, when you are newlywed, when you are a new parent, when you are in a new job, when you are working day to day, where is your life? We don't come to the end and say, now I'm going to live and this is the part that counts. Every moment, every time we are together and paying attention to what is going on in our hearts and in the lives and the eyes of other people, we are present in life because that's where life is lived. It's not lived in a final splurge after retirement. The final splurge is fine, but it's in every splurge. It's in all the peak moments, and there's no contradiction, incidentally, between all those wonderful peak moment things that we used to talk about in the 60s and the regular moments along the highway of life, because it's the regular and the everyday where love really happens and grows, that prepares us for the peak moments, and as our hymn said, and prepares us for when it's tough. That's the hard work and the daily, hopefully joyful and conscious work that we do in leading our lives. This has been a tough week. I have been in touch with a number of my friends and I can say colleagues at NBC, people who are also in the news business. And I felt the loss of Tim Russert personally, one, being a man of a certain age, being a man whose father died at an early age from exactly that. But the other was, we have this sense of virtually knowing people and seeing them through the camera and through the screen, and we believe that we know them, and sometimes we do. Sometimes what we see is in fact who they are. And what you got from Russert was a sense of excitement, of engagement, of joy, not in the gotcha, but joy in the whole process and an enjoyment of everything that he did. Some people are doing these autopsies. Well, he was a workaholic. He loved everything that he did. He loved the excitement and the enthusiasm and the preparation, and he made it look easy because he worked hard to make it look easy. And he loved all of it. Wow. The light that was in his eyes was a light of enthusiasm, and he lived. He lived. We mourn that he died, but he lived. Also in this week, I was out to dinner. My wife and I went out with some of the students in my Islam class. I teach a course at least once a year up at the American Jewish University in Islam. It's not a conversion course. They're not that crazy. And it's not an anti-course. It is a course about Islam, which is a great religion. And we went out to dinner at an Arab restaurant and shared. And what was around that table was just so extraordinary. Three of the women had husbands who had died very young in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Three of the women had had breast cancer. Everybody was wrestling with all of these issues of mortality. And what mortality has to remind us of is how we lead our lives every day. How we lead our lives and find joy in the moment every day. And making the places and the spaces in our hearts and minds to be open in a world of pain for the joy that is there. And in a world of pain with people who have problems that we cannot solve, to still be able to walk into a room, to take a hand and just sit quietly without an answer and being present. To say to each other, here I am. To say to life, here I am. It is not important if these cufflinks are gold or brass. It is important that they put me in touch and in line with the past, with my personal past, and with my father. It is not important that I like the tie. It is important that my children took the time, and fortunately they have a father who is in the 6% of working men who wear ties. Another statistic from NPR this morning. I don't know where it came from. I don't testify to the truth of the matter, but it is what they said. 6% who wear ties. So I actually have a use for a tie. Give me ties for Father's Day. It's just fine. These are not important in themselves. What they are is they are literally souvenirs. They are saved memory that put us in touch with our lives and with the people in our lives who have touched us, some who have hurt us, some who have helped us, and who are important to us. Memory, conscious memory, and the choice to be present to each other, to ourselves, and to life is what today is about, and it really is what every day is about.